From WXXI News, it's Arts Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. It is Arts Friday, and our next connection will be on Tuesday, March 17th, and I'm going to say 6 p.m. Good Luck Restaurant. That's my choice for our next connection. I could have chosen a lot from what's coming up later this month, but I'll tell you why I chose March 17th, 6 p.m. Good Luck Restaurant. Of all the upcoming film events in our community, that one might be the single coolest. Four short films paired with food. You know, you pair food with wine or beer. Pairing food with film is a great idea. We're going to get to the details coming up. It's part of Greentopia Film, which is later this month. And so let's talk about Greentopia, how it is changing, Greentopia Film, and much more. In studio with us is Michael Phillipson, who's the co-founder of Greentopia going back to 2011. Thanks for being here.
Thanks.
And Linda Maroney's here, the director of Greentopia Film. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, I started with good luck because whose idea was it to pair film and food? Was that you, Linda?
Sometimes we just brainstorm stuff constantly around
such
the office. And so I don't remember exactly who came up with that, but it's probably the most fun aspect of what we do.
I know. It's a weird place to start, but I thought of all the things that if I find a way to get a babysitter for a night or something, that's what I've got to do. What's going on that night at Good Luck? How's it work?
Well, let me take you back for a minute. What I do ahead of time is I put together basically a menu of short food films that I lay out for Chef Dan Martello. And it's savory films. It's sweet films. There's beverage movies.
That is awesome.
And then he watches all of them and chooses the four that speak to him the best. That we don't tell anyone ahead of time which the films are going to be, but I will say it has something to do with barbecue, Cajun food, oysters, and something sweet this year. And then we set up a screen at Good Luck. We show the films, and then after each film, a course comes out that's inspired by that film in some way.
Maybe the coolest food event that I've ever heard of. That is great. And how long are the films? Four of them?
Usually they're, it's also, that's the one tricky thing, mm-hmm. because you need to have it a certain length for service. So they're usually between 10 and 15 minutes at most.
Okay. And the filmmakers come from where?
The filmmakers are usually not here for mm-hmm. that one. Mm-hmm. But we do a cocktail hour.
But the films come in from anywhere.
They come in from all over the world.
Okay.
But we will be premiering our three community supported short films, which is sort of a play on community supported agriculture. And so we will show those ahead of time. And actually, they all have to do with food this year, too, which is quite interesting. And then as the food comes out after the movies, it's all paired with a different wine as well. And I have yet to hear any of the diners complain about any aspect of it, to be quite honest.
Well, so that is the 17th of March this year. How often have you done that in the past?
This is our third year.
Third year doing it?
Yeah.
And it's a ticketed event. So if you want to go that night, you got to get tickets, which we're going to get to all the details on how you can get involved and go see a lot of this stuff coming up here. But can you give me a sense in the past what kind of a food pairing with a film idea was?
Well, they're all, documentaries. And so most of these are portraits of people that are artisans, making food. Last year we did an amazing one, a French Canadian film about a maple syrup house that was pretty phenomenal. There was the oyster.
The oyster one stands out in my mind. We had was that last year as well? Yeah, I think it was. We had a film about a gentleman from, I can't remember, somewhere on the coast, and he was an oyster harvester, and he talked about oysters, and it got to be very sort of sensual and erotic during this thing. He really saw oysters as, aphrodisiacs, and the what they were, and it was really everybody started twittering and laughing a little bit about this film, and then this giant course of oysters came out from the kitchen. So that was one of the coolest ones I think we've had.
So really, I don't even know until the night what the courses are going to be. I know the movies, I know what we're going to show, but I have no idea until the plates come out what exactly we'll be eating.
What kind of, how broad of a selection did you have to work with to come down to four?
Again, some of it goes back to timing. Mm-hmm. So there's a ton of wonderful short food films that are 4 minutes, 5 minutes long, and that just becomes too tricky for what we need to do. But we plow through probably about 100 of them, and I pare it down for Dan, and
wow.
Then he goes through his menu of movies and lets me know which one he wants to work with.
Now, if you've been to Good Luck, it's in a is that the old Fabrics and Findings? Is that what
yes,
that is?
It is, yeah.
It's a really cool space. But it is pretty loud usually. It's got a lot of energy. It's pretty loud. Do people shut it down and lock into the film?
They really do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the cocktail hour is pretty busy and loud, and then they all get seated at the long tables. It's all long tables, so everybody can kind of, you know, co-mingle and all that. And once we start the films, they pretty much calm right down, and then the chorus comes out, and then everybody starts talking again.
Absolutely.
And then, so it's kind of this back and forth, and it's really an incredible event.
And before I move on from this to the many other things happening, food, kind of the play on community-supported agriculture, that's a fun idea, Linda.
Yeah. Yeah. So instead of having trailers before all of our films, mm-hmm. that most film festivals do, we came up with the idea of commissioning local filmmakers, sort of supporting them in their careers as well, and having them create films that are 3 to 4 minutes about something that's flying under the radar within the Rochester community, dealing with sustainability. And we broadly interpret that word because we fully feel that unless every aspect of the organism is healthy, that the whole organism is not healthy. So we do have a YouTube channel. If you go to Greentopia Film, you can see our 6 films, 3 from last year and 3 from the year before, of what we've done. They've been pretty incredible. They've won awards. And then at the night at Good Luck, you'll see our three films for this year.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have these incredible filmmakers locally. I mean, Rochester is an amazing city for film, and it's astounding to me that these local filmmakers would put out such a quality product. As Linda said, they've won Telly Awards and other kinds of awards in other places, so they're going to be really great films.
Michael Phillipson, the co-founder of Greentopia, Linda Maroney, the director of Greentopia Film, and I think it's appropriate to step back and for our audience who may be hearing Greentopia and thinking, well, they're used to sort of a slate of September events going back to 2011. There's some change in the air, so this month is Greentopia Film, but Michael, what's the broad view of what Greentopia is becoming?
Well, Evan, you know, we did some strategic planning with our board this past fall. And while we loved to put on the Greentopia Festival in High Falls, it was a very condensed time period. And part of the issue for us was, well, you know, our message gets out, but it gets out for a week during the year. How could we morph and change and adjust that so that people heard the Greentopia and sustainability messages all throughout the year? So what we decided to do was tease out certain events from Greentopia, the week-long event, and present them at different times during the year. That's what we did with film. We moved the film to the spring. We are moving the biannual Future Summit to the fall, and we'll be doing that with MCC this year, who also happens to be a partner in our film festival. And the street festival may go on a hiatus for a few years. Mm-hmm. It may also come back once we get some more infrastructure and so forth built at High Falls. So what we want to do is make sure that the Greentopia message gets out throughout the year. So what we did also is we took all the vendors that were at Greentopia and we created a portal website. So now people can go online to our website and find all those vendors and services right online 365 days a year, 7 days a week.
Starts Friday. We're talking Greentopia. And if this works out the way you're envisioning, Michael, will Greentopia become really what it is this year, but will it be known as a series of events all throughout the year, not one weekend, but with a theme? So if it's a film festival or if it's, you know, all different things that you're describing, that's what the future of Greentopia will be.
Yeah, I mean, Greentopia now is the name of the organization. We did a name change in January, and Greentopia really is the entity that is bringing Rochester and the region into a more sustainable, resilient future. We do a variety of different programs and projects, and Greentopia is now the umbrella organization that handles all that.
Interesting to see where it is in 2015. What was your vision 5 years ago?
Well, we originally wanted to create a floating arboretum on the Pont de Rennes Bridge. That was the first vision.
So you started small.
Started small, yeah. Yes. But, you know, it was astounding to us how many people came on board for the green and sustainability messages that Greentopia really wanted to get out there, how many people really want to see the resurgence of High Falls, how many people think that these kinds of things will both attract young people to stay here, attracts people to come to Rochester, how the Gardenerial, the new project around High Falls, could actually become a magnet for Rochester and for the downtown. It just started growing and growing, and so many people have now come on board that we feel that this could be one of the most transformational projects for the city in the next 10 years or so.
And for those not familiar, explain Garden Aerial.
Well, Garden Aerial is our capital project to build new trail infrastructure, attractions all around the rim of the gorge, including things like a new bridge across High Falls, a zip line from the east side to the bottom park that would go right across the falls, more gardens and walking paths, buildings, all of course showcasing sustainable and resilient technologies. So that High Falls really becomes an incredible destination, a great place where people want to be, that people want to take their relatives to come see this incredible natural wonder that we've now really raised the bar for.
I think there's something that I've never understood when it comes to High Falls. You know, I moved here about a decade and a half ago now, and that was a time when Mayor Bill Johnson was trying to inject some life when it came to businesses down here in High Falls, and there were questions about taxpayer outlays, and if people don't want to go there, they won't go there. I've never understood why would it ever be difficult when you look at High Falls? This is something that I've never understood where it sort of is, and I'm not saying it's struggling or in some ways maybe it is, but why? I don't fully understand that.
Well, you know, for decades, almost a century and a half, High Falls has been an industrial river. We put a lot of our industry, we polluted the river. You know, it was the place that the city really turned its back on, even though it was the place that birthed the city of Rochester. But now we look around at a lot of other cities, Tulsa, Minneapolis, Anacostia in Washington, D.C. They are all doing these riverfront projects, which really are engines for both economic and societal and tourism transformation for these cities. So the idea that we have this natural asset with a 100-foot-high waterfall, for instance, Minneapolis that's doing their park, their waterfall is man-made and it's 20 feet high. So, you know,
a little different.
You know, when we look around at all these cities doing that and see what they have and then look at what we have such a much more incredible asset in the gorge and the falls and the whole flora and fauna and biodiversity that represents.
Sure.
So, and most, you know, as I say in many of my speeches that I give around town, you know, most cities would cut off their right arm for an asset like High Falls.
Right. When you bring people from out of town here, when they see that, usually the response I've seen is, oh my gosh, how did I not know about this? Right. Isn't that usually what you see?
Yes. I mean, that's we heard people at many of the Greentopias on their cell phones, oh my gosh, I've never been down here.
Or yeah, Rochesterians have never been to High
yes,
Falls.
Either. Yes, absolutely. So, you know, our whole thing is, you know, can we polish this natural asset, bring it back to really become a vital part of Rochester and to contribute to the revitalization that is now beginning to happen in downtown Rochester.
Talking to Michael Phillipson, the co-founder of Greentopia, Linda Maroney, the director of Greentopia Film, which is later this month. And, you know, maybe Michael's significant other is a little too acerbic to get gushy. But I have to say, Linda, I talked to your husband and he was really he's really proud of you and the work you're doing with this. He told me, I mean, he really did. He told me how much it matters to you, what Greentopia Film matters, the whole ethos of it. So let's take a broader look now at what's coming up later this month. We talked about good luck and how exciting that event is, but there's a lot more. Let's talk about that.
I think, you know, I love documentary films, and I have for long time. I make them, I teach them, I've started a documentary organization for filmmakers in town. I have Greentopia, I have a monthly doc series at the Little, so I drink this Kool-Aid. It's sort of our family store, you know, as you can imagine. So this is an amazing 5-day festival of nonfiction film. And I think for a long time, people associated documentary film with sort of the vegetables at the filmmaking table that, oh, yeah, I know I'm supposed to eat those, but they don't really taste good. I know they'll make me healthier, but it's too much work. And it's really not like that anymore. You know, it's definitely the golden age of nonfiction filmmaking. You know, documentary films are exciting and they're funny and they're thrilling and all these wonderful things that you associate with traditionally with narrative films. But it's not just that anymore. So we highlight really good films. You know, they are documentaries, but they're really good films. They're not purely message movies by any stretch of the imagination. And then we really wrap it in this sort of beautiful package. Before every film, you get to the theater, you know, at least 20 minutes early, and there'll be buskers on stage. We have live musicians. This year, I think we actually have magicians, you know, at one of them. We have teen slam poets. One year, I hope we get jugglers. But we create this really fun, festive feeling when you walk into the theater, and then you're shown this film that... Really, we want to stir the pot of conversation. Last year, we had one night where we showed a pro-nuclear film with an anti-fracking movie back-to-back. So it's all about getting that conversation going. Then after the films, we have Q&As, mostly with the filmmakers, sometimes there, sometimes via Skype, depending on their schedules, or a panel of local experts in the field of whatever the issue is.
And by the way, Michael, it just so happened that I just didn't talk to your significant other. I maybe he would be very sweet about it too. No, I happen to know both of their partners very well, and I just didn't talk to. So it's no fun.
No, it's okay. He's actually quite passionate about this.
I'm sure
this
he
as
is.
Well.
I actually worked with Michael's significant others. Yeah. So anyway, Jesse, if you're there. It's nice.
Yeah, he may be listening.
He may be listening. So maybe he would be sweet. He can also be acerbic, but in a really loving way.
A little of both.
Yeah. So now we've outlined kind of the goal here, but I also want to talk about what documentary journalism is now, Linda, and especially the power you have, because Linda is helping select the films that we're going to see here, but you're also a filmmaker yourself.
Right.
And when I talk to documentary filmmakers, you are... You know, it's not just, as you say, a message film. There's a great story to tell. But don't you at times have to be, you want to tell a great story, but you want to make sure you're always hewing to as accurate a story as you can?
100%.
And there can be a pull to a narrative that maybe can be tempting. Tell me a little bit about the push and pull there.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think... you know, it obviously depends on the filmmaker, but every documentary clearly has a point of view, whether it's very overt, like a Michael Moore, or it's much more subtle and hidden. But I think that's very pronounced and spoken throughout the film. I think with journalism, you know, you're not as supposed to have that as much, that it's supposed to be much more that, you know, it's the same information just told in different ways. But what's interesting now and why we're having the panel, which is free and open to the public, on Thursday at 5:00 at the Center of High Falls, is that there's more and more of this sort of overlap that's happening. The New York Times is embracing op-docs and short-form documentaries and focusing on that. And then there's also documentarians that are looking at issues much more in depth because journalists don't always have the time or the money to do it. And there's more and more crossover, you know, so it's becoming a very interesting space. So at our panel, we are going to have some of the filmmakers from out of town, some local filmmakers, and also some local journalists discussing their viewpoints on that because, you know, they're in the trenches every day. So it'll be quite fascinating to see what they have to say about all this.
When is the panel again?
It is Thursday, which is
the
19th at 5:00. It's only 1 hour at the Center of High Falls. And Helene Bienduti-Hofer is our moderator.
And Matthew Leonard will be there. Mm-hmm. In fact, this is I should have known all the great names you have on this panel. So Helene Bienduti-Hofer, of course, the host of Need to Know, our colleague. She'll be the moderator. Matthew Leonard, the editor of the Innovation Trail at WXXI, will be there. Adam Chodak, a morning anchor and a journalist from 13 WHAM News, will be there. Carvin Eisen, a filmmaker, the man who was the co-creator of July 1964, will be there. Andrea Scott, a filmmaker. Laura Kissel. So... great panel called Truth Be Told, 5:00 on Thursday the 19th. And where is that?
That's at the Center of High Falls, which we have dubbed into our urban forest cinema. Every year we have a non-traditional space that we create a forest cinema. Last year we turned it into the urban forest cinema, and it seems to move each year, but maybe we'll be here for a while.
We like to move around to different venues, you know.
Recycle our venues.
Yeah.
When you're watching a film, whether it's 5 minutes or 2 hours, if you don't know the point of view of the filmmaker, is that a problem for you? Do you want to know the point of view?
You know, it depends on the film itself. You know, looking at our slate of films, some of the films are very clear, you know, very clear what the point of view is. Then there's other ones that are a little more poetic and a little more experimental. There's this beautiful film called Walking Underwater, and it's about a sea nomads that are off the Malaysian coast. And the message is very, very quiet. There's this amazing underwater cinematography. You know, it's about a boy and his uncle and trying to survive fishing. And you don't really get until the end the encroachment of tourism and all the other issues that are happening and how it's harder for them to get fish and why, because of, you know, what we're doing to oceans and stuff like that. But again, it sort of sneaks up on you. You fall into it, you fall in love, and then the message comes along at the very, very end.
Filmmakers from around the country, around the world. Local filmmaker Dave Marshall's involved.
Yeah, Dave Marshall is a really important local filmmaker here in Rochester. He's won Emmys for previous films, and he has a really beautiful film called Beginning with the End that we are going to show that highlights a program at the Harley School that pairs seniors for a year with a hospice facility in Penfield. And it's a really beautiful film. It's shot exquisitely, but it's also about transitions.
Pairs high school seniors?
High school seniors.
You mentioned seniors with the hospice. High school seniors at the Harley School.
And they're about to transition to the next phase of their lives, just as these hospice patients are about to transition to another phase as well. So it's this really wonderful, gentle film that is very verite in a lot of ways and exquisite.
Yeah, what a remarkable way to share with, because we all know when we were 17 and 18, you feel invincible, right?
Right.
You feel like you will live forever. Time sort of has no meaning. So that's Beginning with the End. And we're hitting some of the films now, but let's make sure people know where to find the list and if they want to target films to see. Where can they do that?
Well, they can go to our website, greentopia.org/film, and you'll see the entire 2015 program there. You can buy tickets. There's still passes available, student senior educator passes, VIP passes that get you into all the films and the Hearts closing party. Individual tickets are available. There's lots of ways to come enjoy our film festival, definitely this year. And you can do that all online at greentopia.org/film.
I'm looking at the list here as well. Cotton Road, for example. And it's not a competitive festival, right, Linda? But tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's sort of not in our spirit to really be competitive if we're trying to make a festival about sustainability. It didn't feel right to us, but we did want to highlight one film each year that really spoke to sort of the spirit of Greentopia and about looking at our choices that we make every day and long-term and how it impacts our lives and how it impacts future generations. And that became our Fork in the Road Award, which our statue is literally a fork in a piece of road.
really hard to put that together, by the way. It's difficult to get the fork in the asphalt.
Yeah, don't make a glass fork. But Cotton Road is this really wonderful film. It's incredibly poetic. It is the photography is stunning. The music is stunning. It really takes you. It's the journey of garments, basically, and garments that are cheaply bought in this country. So it starts in South Carolina with cotton farmers and how difficult that is in this day and age. And then eventually you go overseas to a manufacturing facility in China run by a woman, and you live with the women there that work there and the woman who runs it, and you see every aspect that goes into buying a t-shirt for $16.99.
How long is the film?
I don't remember exactly. I'd say it's about maybe an hour and 20, I think that one.
Yeah, 72 minutes.
So that's the film that will receive the Fork in the Road Award this year. It's you know, stunning in so many ways.
All right. I mean, I can't review every single one, but I'm looking down the list here. I mean, and the nice thing is on the website, you can see that list. You can also check out, they will link you to the film's website, the trailers, Misconception, The Immortalists, Seas of Time, Monk with a Camera, Florence, Arizona. Anything you want to stand out real quick and mention, Linda?
Well, I have a couple favorites. Yeah, go ahead. I think The Immortalists is going to be great. It's these two guys that have figured out that it's not scientifically impossible anymore, may not be, to extend our lives infinitely, and that's why they're called the Immortalists. And they both have very different ideas about how to do that. And I've just seen the trailer, but I was glued to it, and I think it's a fascinating
idea.
It's
a great one because I'm instantly thinking, if I could do it, would I want to? I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think I'd want to live.
Well, it's kind of a neat pairing,
forever.
Actually, talking to beginning with the end, you know,
yeah.
Letting go of life, and these people want to extend it. So it's, you know, sometimes films talk to each other.
And Monk with a Camera, I think, is going to be good. Nikki Vreeland, grandson of Diana Vreeland, grew up, you know, as a very privileged, wealthy background. He was a photographer and decided to become a Buddhist monk, Linda, I think?
Yeah,
Buddhist monk. And now he's called Monk with a Camera. And so this film is about him and about him going around and taking pictures of life with his camera, which I think is just a fascinating
story.
It's
also about his sort of attachment. You know, he's got a great attachment to this camera and photography, and yet as a Buddhist monk, you're not supposed to have attachments. So there's that sort of spiritual sustainability that we're looking at there. There's two directors. They will be Skyping in. One of the directors from The Immortalists will be here in person. The director, Laura Kissel of Cotton Road, will be here as well in person.
When you're watching these films, do you think you become a better filmmaker yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's so lucky. I get to sit and watch hundreds of movies for a few months, you know, not see my family at night, but I get to sit there and watch and watch and watch. And then it's like, okay, now you go and make something. You know, it's like it's being sent to the Louvre for 3 months and then be like, okay, here's paints, go.
And we've got some free events too, Evan, if I might
mention
those. So as Linda said, on the 19th, the Urban Forest Cinema will be held at in Browns Race at the Browns Race Market, right there at Browns Race. So Truth Be Told will be that great panel with the journalist. Then that'll be followed by Green Drinks, which is a monthly event. Happens around the world, actually. Green Drinks is a worldwide phenomenon where green people get together and talk about what they're doing in their various worlds. And then after that, we're actually going to have a world premiere of another film music event by Andrew Alden, a local musician, filmmaker. The guy is pretty incredible. He has created a film about winter in Rochester that'll be shown along with live music. So that'll be a free event on Thursday the 19th at the Centers at High Falls. And Kidtopia.
I was just going to talk about that. Kidtopia. This is, I guess, our third year of doing that, where we have created a program. It's just over an hour of animated films and short docs for kids, including young kids.
Saturday the 21st.
At noon at the Little Theater.
Kidtopia. So how young for kids?
I would say, you know, four or five even. You know, there's a lot of animal film. Those aren't hard message movies, as you might imagine. It's very, you know, animals of different around the world. There's a really great little documentary about a girl who lives in the rainforest, whose family harvests cacao beans and stuff.
Cool.
As well. Yeah.
I think stuff like that is wonderful. I remember when my nephew was four, who's now 12, when he was four, my wife and I got him this video that was supposed to be a digital documentary of the dinosaurs. You know, we thought that would be kind of a cool idea. And he's 4 years old, and he loved dinosaurs, as a lot of four-year-olds do. So we're watching the film, and 5 minutes in, one of the larger dinosaurs starts eating, and I mean really eating the small dinosaurs. I mean really, really eating. And my wife and I looked at each other and said, what have we done here? And the four-year-old nephew pointed at the screen and said, he's eating him. You know, he wasn't like upset. It was nature. But I guess that was my way of saying, I don't know if I would have done that again, given the choice. But kids can handle a lot of really interesting stuff. And I love letting films let them see the world.
Yeah.
When you talk about growing cacao or all these cool things.
Absolutely. The films are from around the world. And we try and not do, there are foreign films, but we try not to do stuff with too much subtitles that might be difficult for younger kids. So some of them are nonverbal, you know, but some of them are definitely verbal.
Yep, and we got just a couple other ones. We have a Shorttopia event on Wednesday night, and that's a bunch of really great, we call them adult shorts. They're not adult, you know, they're for adults
versus
Kidtopia.
Yes, I understand.
And after that, there'll be a great party at Rock Brewing you'll be able to go to. Do you know the details of the Rock Brewing? You show your ticket or something, and there's.
I believe so. I think it's on the website, but I know that they are doing at Rock Brewing. It's an event with the Rochester Young Professionals, but you can attend if you're young at heart.
Okay.
But they are doing trivia there, Greentopia trivia,
Greentopia,
which
trivia,
should be
that's
really
right.
fun.
And then our closing party, our Big Bash closing party Saturday night, will be at Hart's Local Grocers. So we're going to take over the whole front of Hart's.
I was going to ask you, so because I've been in there, it's a really cool space. But so the party will be toward the front there, where all the kind of the tables are.
We'll have guards in the aisles, so we'll we'll guard against any shoplifting of their wonderful stuff. But yeah, they've been great, great partners with us in creating this kind of neat party at Hart's. We'll be having some live music there. It's going to be $20 to get in. We'll have live music, drinks, some food, and just kind of close out the whole film festival at one of the hottest, coolest spots in town. You know, we like our grocery stores, so I think it makes sense.
A Greentopia party at Hart's where they make my favorite drink in town, the Greenberry Smoothie.
Oh, love it.
I haven't seen it.
Love
it. Yeah. Yeah, it's really great. It's a lot of kale, and the kale hides. Nothing wrong with kale. I mean, I love kale, but it really hides in there, and it's really great. So that's Saturday night for the closing night. So you've gotten kind of the outline. March 17th through the 21st is Greentopia Film. And we've been talking to Michael Phillipson, the co-founder of Greentopia, Linda Maroney, who is the director of Greentopia Film. How many total films are showing?
I did send a note about that. I know. It's so much
I didn't
to
mean
keep
to try to stump you. I'm just curious because I'm looking down your list here.
I believe there's 34 or somewhere in that range. Hang on just a second.
And where did I just...
34 from 20 countries and 8 produced. We received submissions from 26 countries and covering 6 continents.
And I'm holding a program guide. Did I get this from City? Where did this come
from?
City Newspaper.
This week. Yep.
City Newspaper this week. So it's kind of a mini, it's like an insert, I guess.
Yeah, right? Our program guide is inserted there. And you can find more details on all of the films, all of the, you know, the panel. You can have... where to get tickets.
Yeah, it's all online. Even the program guide's online. You can flip through that online if you'd like. So if you missed it in City Newspaper, go online. It'll be right there, and we'll have them, obviously, at the events as well.
So. All right. Well, Michael, before we wrap up here, let me ask you then, looking forward here, if your vision for Greentopia going forward is successful, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, we will have accomplished what?
Well, I think we will have accomplished bringing Rochester and the region really more fully into the green and sustainability and resiliency messages. And we will get people here to start thinking more about how they do things, everything from water quality and runoff to recycling to the food that they eat and they grow, how they recycle, how we look at energy use, and are we producing our own energy? There's talk of microgrids. These things are beginning now to happen in Rochester. And I think we're successful if we open conversations, like I think the Documentary Film Festival does, if we're just bringing this information to the fore and offering people resources and guides, like with our portal guide, that can help them in their quest to grow green. You know, this is the younger generation really wants to do this, and I think they're sort of starved for a little information here, and we hope that we can offer that to them and to everyone in the city.
I think you're right. I think from what I can tell of the younger generation, a lot of them are really locked into this idea. I also think what something like Greentopia seems to be doing is showing us different ways in our lives that, as Linda said, sustainability has kind of a wide net. And I think what doesn't help is cynicism that I understand the cynicism about, for example, Davos, or we're going to fly massive jets to go in and drive massive SUVs and transport world leaders to talk about how to make a greener planet. I understand the cynicism about that. But what I think is harmful is when we say, well, if we really want to be sustainable, we shouldn't be driving cars at all, or you know, you're not recycling enough, or do you know where every thread of clothing you own comes from? And which, by the way, I think that's a valid question, and I think I can always do better. But I get turned off when I feel like, well, if I'm not doing everything, then I should give up and do nothing, as opposed to incrementally learning where in your life can you find a way to be more sustainable.
We call that one good green idea at a time.
Yeah, I think in many ways it's probably more practical. I'd love to become super sustainable overnight, but that's what I think gets people turned off. It's kind of like when people make a New Year's resolution. I'm going to lose 50 pounds, and by the end of January they're done. I think we can turn people off when you push them in a way that sort of demeans efforts that are sincere. And I'm trying not to rationalize that.
Yeah, no, and absolutely. And I think Greentopia also likes to bring that message in a sort of fun and novel way. You know, this doesn't... It all doesn't have to be doom and gloom, or you know, only 100%, or you know, that's not worth it. So the idea is, can we bring these messages in a way people understand, in a way that's easy to do, and in a way that just gets them talking, gets the whole ideas of this stuff bubbling around, and through that interaction, we think in the larger society in the Rochester in the region, we will eventually begin to move. More quickly towards that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, the website one more time, check out the schedule there.
Greentopia.org/film.
17th through the 21st, starting with that great event at Good Luck. Maybe I'll see
you
there.
Maybe
I will see you there.
You better be there.
Hold on a sec, that's on a Tuesday?
Tuesday.
That's not even a teaching night for me.
See,
there you go.
So if my wife is listening, maybe we, maybe the grandparents can hang out.
Maybe we have to talk to his
significant other. There's wine there too, Evan.
I've been to Good Luck. I know the deal there. Congratulations on sort of the changes and what you've been able to accomplish later this month and going forward. Have fun. Thank you, Michael. Great to talk to you. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Evan.
And Linda, I don't know how you do all the work that you did to get this thing ready, but have fun. And I will talk to you on a separate day about some of the work that you're doing, if you could.
Happy to do that.
I want to bring you back and talk about some of your own work. But have fun later this month. It's greentopia.org. Short break, and we'll be right back right here on Arts Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we're talking Montessori schooling. Who is it most appropriate for? What are the benefits? What do the advocates say to the critics? Montessori first hour. Then we're talking freedom of information. In light of what we've seen with Hillary Clinton's emails and Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration's emails, should the public have more access to information and email? That conversation Monday.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Village at Unity, independent senior living that supports an active, independent lifestyle, offering hospitality, personal transportation, and other amenities. The Village at Unity, like no other. For tours, call 723-7442.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. It is really, I think, the shortest break I know on any radio program, and so our next guest is maybe out of breath, but we've made it. So let me go ahead and welcome Jesse Noth here, who is the Community Engagement Specialist with the South Wedge Planning Committee, and on this Arts Friday, we're talking about a part of the city of Rochester that has changed a lot in recent years, and we were just talking about High Falls, for example, but sometimes people look around our own city. You've lived here how long?
Seven or eight years now.
Yep. And people, you look around your own city and sometimes you might not be aware of what is changing and what is growing and what is starting to thrive.
I've definitely seen a lot of change in the last 8 years.
Especially with the South Wedge, for example, which, by the way, for those who don't live in the city or maybe are not familiar with the boundaries, how do you define the South Wedge?
The South Wedge proper is the river to 490 down to Gregory Street. But most people associate the South Wedge with a larger area in Southeast Rochester, so going into the Highland Park neighborhoods. Some people tie in part of Monroe into that. And SWPC serves as South Wedge proper, and our partner organization, the Southeast Area Coalition, serves the greater Southeast neighborhood. So,
what's the biggest change you've seen in 8 years?
Probably the construction of South and Gregory, the mm-hmm. buildings there that they put up, that infill construction that was really done looking historically at what used to be there and making sure the building fit with the character of the neighborhood and bringing new storefronts in. And I mean, I remember when there used to be a lot of vacant storefronts on South Ave even, and now, you know, they're only vacant for a few months. So
it's if something opens up, there's generally a lot of demand for things coming in there. And we're going to talk in a moment specifically about what is there and what's been going on if you haven't been there. Jesse Noth is with us. He contacted me. I think you contacted me after we talked 19th Ward on the program. Was that right? I'm trying to remember. We talked about 19th Ward on this program a number of weeks ago, talking about growth, change, ways to grow. And it's interesting. The city is... is, I don't mean divided in a way that's really divided or competitive. It's just that certain neighborhoods really take a lot of pride. And I heard from folks in the South Wedge, and they said in March you've got this event coming up. 2 weeks from today at the Academy of Medicine on East Avenue, what's coming up for, you call it City Love.
City Love, yep. So City Love will be at the Academy of Medicine on March 20th. The event will run from 6:30 to 9:30. And it supports three nonprofits in the city. All of us do housing and neighborhood work. So it's the South Wedge Planning Committee, or SWPIC, Southeast Area Coalition, or SEEK, and the NCS Community Development, which serves neighborhoods in the Northwest. The fundraising gala is about highlighting our city and all the amazing things in it. So all of our food are from local restaurants. We're working to make sure that all of our beer is from local breweries, yes, in the city. We will hopefully be getting some hard liquor from Black Button Distilling, you know, our only distiller in the city. Mm-hmm. And while we can't get any wine from the city, we do have wonderful vineyards in the Finger Lakes very close to us. So it's all about loving our city, loving our neighborhoods, and highlighting all the great businesses and people in our city.
2 weeks from today, Friday the 20th of March at the Academy of Medicine. Starts when?
6:30.
Okay. And if you want to get out there now, do you get tickets in advance?
Buying tickets in advance is excellent. They are available at rockcitylove.com, or you can also get them through our Facebook event page. If you look up City Love on Facebook, you'll find our event, and you can get tickets that way. The event will feature the Bill Tiberio Band, as well as a photo booth, hors d'oeuvres, desserts, cash bar, and a live and silent auction.
Talking to Jesse Noth, who's a community engagement specialist with the South Wedge Planning Committee. There's an acronym I had not heard until today, SWPIC.
SWPIC.
But the South Wedge is a place that we've seen in the last decade a lot of growth, new businesses, and the kind of businesses that involve a lot of elbow grease. I think about Solera and Cheshire. I think about places like that that renovating old spaces or creating new ideas. Take me through the South Wedge. You're walking down the street and
something I do a lot.
Yes, I know you do. Take me through it.
Well, the heart of the South Wedge is South and Gregory. And way back when the South Wedge Planning Committee first got started, it really was about saving that commercial heart and the rest of the community. There was a point where the city and the state was ready to take bulldozers to most of the South Wedge. By engaging the community and organizing, they were able to save a lot of houses and that historic brick-on-brick construction that really has that urban feel, that urban village. So at South and Gregory, you go either way, and it's solid storefronts to the curb, lots of artistic bike posts, as well as murals all over. So the neighborhood's really been filled with art over the last few years. And, you know, the businesses match that eclectic art style. We have lots of coffee shops, artisan chocolate, sushi, the Little Blue Shop, artisan cheeses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now there are more restaurants filling in that are really concentrating on that local identity. So the Buddha Pub, which opened last fall, really pushes local food, local beer, local drinks, as well as having the German House above it, which awesome local music there. So I think the Wedge as a whole really takes on that local vibe and embraces it.
A lot of the talk in, especially the last 24 months when it comes to the future of Rochester, has been about walkability, mm-hmm. or at least more pedestrian friendly. We talk about filling a third of the inner loop and what's going to happen there. And how much do you consider the South Wedge to be walkable or pedestrian friendly?
Well, it's definitely something I take to heart. I'm a all-year cyclist, so I'm getting
all year cyclist.
All-year cyclist. This winter's been little harder.
The hardest one yet for you.
Officially.
Officially, yeah.
But the South Wedge, when you have that dense business development, all of a sudden walking a few blocks doesn't seem like that much. When you're in a neighborhood that doesn't have that business development, or where there's a lot of vacant lots and all that, walking a few blocks, it just seems like you're going a lot further because there's not shops to look into. There's, you know, you don't have that connection to what's around you. So it's like, let me get through this as fast as possible, as opposed to, this is a nice place for me to be walking around. I enjoy going through this neighborhood. And that encourages you to walk to local businesses. When you are walking or biking, as opposed to driving a car, you're going a lot slower, so you can actually see all the changes. In your car, you might drive past something every day, and
never notice it, right?
Yeah, it might have changed businesses 2 or 3 months ago, and you wouldn't notice it. If you're walking or on a bike, before the new business even comes in, you're like, "Oh, look, there's something going on there. It's changing. It's let me look up for you know what's next." So, it definitely ties you into your neighborhood. You know, you go out for a cup of coffee, then you see some neighbors, stop for ice cream, get a sandwich, and, you know, that few-minute trip to grab a cup of coffee ends up being an hour-and-a-half stroll and, you know, through the community.
You said maybe 10 years or so ago, there was a real possibility of government bulldozers knocking down structures there.
I was a little that was back in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, okay. But yeah, all right. So we're talking about not that long ago. This was a very different place.
Yes, it was.
What would have been there if those bulldozers would have taken out those buildings? What would have happened?
I'm not sure. I mean,
I guess they would have hoped for new development.
Would have lost the commercial hub in the neighborhood. They would have probably tried and forced housing in. Mm-hmm. Probably had to resort to public housing developments to get something in there. Probably closer to what parts of Cornhill experienced, like along Clarissa Street, that did suffer the bulldozers, and Clarissa Street is still pretty much vacant land and never got back to that strong commercial corridor that it was in the past. So you'd have, you still have the neighborhood, and the houses, they couldn't bulldoze all the houses, but without that strong commercial core, would it be as desirable for people to move there? Would property values be increasing? Developers are looking there to invest money in the community. Wedge Point is about to open. Those are high-end apartments just on the south edge of the Wedge. Or no, Wedge Point is a different development. It's about to happen. Edge of the Wedge is
Edge of the Wedge.
Yep. So lots of developments happening. Can't keep them all straight.
For sure. Edge of the Wedge is high-end apartments,
yep.
You said.
Edge of the Wedge is high-end.
And again, especially 5-10 years ago, that was sort of hoped for. And now you are seeing people who do want to move there and live there. And that's where I wanted to ask you about as well. We just had a conversation about High Falls in Rochester. And I mentioned that, you know, 12, 15 years ago, I got here, I was amazed by High Falls, but they couldn't make businesses work down here. The city was trying to subsidize and help create an engine of activity down here. I never fully understood why High Falls has been a harder sell, but you can't make people go where they don't want to go. The South Wedge has become a place over the last decade where people do want to go. But how do you kind of draw that line? How do you create a place that people do want to be?
Well, I think the big issue with the High Falls developments of past is that they were trying to create something where there wasn't. You know, there wasn't a direct community around here to utilize
creating
the
a community
shops,
from scratch, yes.
Shops, restaurants, night entertainment, all of that. With the South Wedge, you have that commercial district, but you also have all those neighborhood streets that surround it. You know, so all the people that you want to try to pull to these things are already there.
They're there, yeah.
And then, you know, that lends itself to walking. It's a lot easier to walk to the end of your street than to walk, you know, 10, 15 blocks to get somewhere. So, you know, when it's just around the corner, of course you can walk there. And then that leads to better improvements in walking. You know, the sidewalks are kept up more. Then, you know, more art is put in to make it more pleasant to walk. And all those things just kind of a snowball effect. And, you know, the end result is wonderful.
I think that's a really good analysis. And you also mentioned some of the aesthetics, just the old brick, the integrity of those structures. And I wonder if Swippick, if the planning committee knows of a new business idea or someone wants to come into a certain space, is there a community conversation about the expectations for the aesthetics, for how things look?
When new businesses do want to come into the South Wedge, we actually do offer small business orientation and some classes. We have a partnership with Geneseo to do some small business education and provide some support there. And a lot of the businesses in the South Wedge have utilized that program, including the Swiftwater Brewery that just opened just under 2 months ago.
Because what would happen if somebody comes in and says, I'm going to put a big plastic neon fast food restaurant right in the middle of it?
Well, luckily, we do have zoning codes in the city.
That's where I was
they
going.
They are a good thing. So through zoning and planning, the zoning board and the planning commission, there's actually a lot of rules established for what can and cannot go in certain areas. Parts of the South Wedge are a historic preservation district that adds additional rules and oversight into what can go in and to make sure it fits in the neighborhood and that it's not a big neon plastic fast food thing.
I understand. Well, I got about 90 seconds left here. So your vision, your expectation for the future, you're on the planning committee 3 to 5 to 10 years from now. How's the South Wedge going to be different?
Well, one thing that I can say is that we will have a larger farmers market in the summer with some construction possibly happening in the near future. Businesses will continue to fill up the wedge and other storefronts can be developed. There is some still vacant land that can be redeveloped throughout the wedge. And then that it starts to have a spillover effect to more communities, because just having one vibrant community isn't going to make a strong city. We need lots of vibrant communities. So spilling over, Monroe has very solid, but spilling over into Monroe, coming across the river, and just expanding the vibrancy, further down South Ave and throughout the city.
Because their event in 2 weeks is not called South Wedge Love.
No.
It's called City Love. So one more time, just the details, 2 weeks from tonight.
2 weeks from tonight at the Academy of Medicine. Tickets are available at rockcitylove.com or the City Love Facebook event. You can find out more information by emailing citylove@swipic.org. That's SWPC. Please like us on Facebook, both the event, the South Wedge Planning Committee's page, the Southeast Area Coalition's page, and NCS Community Development's page. If I have a quick minute, can I thank our sponsors?
Be quick. You've got about 10 seconds.
So I'd like to thank all of our sponsors, Highland Hospital, A3 Design, Conifer Realty, Buckingham Properties, The Hype Booth, Bill Tiberio Band, Harder Seacrest and Emery, Edward Jones Investment, Holy Sepulchre.
You got a lot of people.
Cemetery, Cheesy Eddie's, Normandy, and others.
Cheesy Eddie's. That's the one that stuck out in my brain. Look at all the interesting things happening in the South Wedge. And we've talked 19th Ward. We talked High Falls today, talk South Wedge. A lot of interesting things happening in the city. And Jesse Noss, thanks for coming on the program today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And thanks for listening to Arts Friday. John Andrus, always love working with you, my friend. Great job as the engineer today. Been a wonderful week on Connections. Hope you have... I see sunshine and thaw coming our way for the weekend. We will talk to you on Monday on member-supported public radio.